Late in the day yesterday, the announcement was released by the Department of Public Enterprises that Eskom now finally has a permanent CEO, one Mr. Andre de Ruyter. He is currently the CEO of packaging firm Nampak and is due to start his duties at the utility on the 15th of January 2020, that is next year. News of his appointment has been met with mixed sentiments. Parts of Labour have questioned his lack of engineering qualifications, adding that they would have expected the qualifying candidate to at least have that, given Eskom operational problems. Well, to give us his take on the appointment and what new leadership now means for Eskom, I'm joined on the line by Roger Lilly. He's an independent energy analyst. Thanks very much, Roger, for joining us as always. So a lot of people have expressed their two cents worth on the latest appointment, which of course had been eagerly awaited, with others being fairly neutral and looking to give the guy a chance, you know, just by wishing him all the best. So where do you stand on the spectrum and why?
Good evening to you and to your listeners. Thank you for having me on your show. Okay, so Andre is a good guy. He's going to do a good job in the sense of restructuring the organization if he's given the free hand to do so. He is apparently a man who is not a stranger to restructuring of organizations and is able to be strong in terms of making difficult decisions or unpopular decisions, and so he's going to need to do that with Eskom.
Yes.
I think the difficulty that he's going to face is that he is the 13th man in 11 years to be CEO of this entity, and each one of these have suffered basically the same problem, and that is too much political interference and too much resistance from organized labor, in other words, the union. So those are the challenges he's going to walk into on day one. The challenge that he's going to face in terms of the financial situation, I think, is greater than the operational one.
Yeah.
There are plenty of really highly qualified and competent people working within Eskom's operational centers who can do what is needed in terms of operational excellence. But the difficulty has been, and the stumbling block has been finance. The fact that the utility is facing this enormous burden of 450 billion rands of debt, and the fact that it is struggling to recover debt that is owing to it in turn from municipalities and direct users, and the fact also at the same time that the demand for electricity is declining. So this puts the utility in a very difficult position because it needs to sell more electricity in order to increase its revenue income. And at the same time, can't do that by increasing tariffs because if it simply increases tariffs, it just chases customers away. So it needs to be very creative as an entity in terms of trying to attract people back to using electricity, and it can only do that really by structuring tariffs in such a way that they become, you know, really, really attractive as an energy source. Now, we're not talking so much the residential user as the industrial user and the commercial user. These are the ones who need to be encouraged to use Eskom's product.
Yeah,
and that to me is going to be a big selling job, and it's going to be a difficult task because at the same time as doing that, you have to be able to assure the client that you're trying to sell your product to that you're capable of supplying it reliably, which unfortunately Eskom has not been able to do.
Yeah.
So it really is stuck in a very difficult position. I don't envy Andre de Ruyter one bit.
Given the dynamics that you've just outlined, do you think that Mr. de Ruyter is going to immediately flag up the overloaded staff complement at Eskom? The World Bank has said that Eskom is overstaffed to the tune of two-thirds. I recall when the former CEO, Phakamani, I forget his name, Phakamani Khadebe, when he tried to institute a no-wage increase agreement, he was sticking to his guns, the board was sticking to their guns, and then, of course, there was some sort of intervention. Now, if it were to come to the issue of retrenchments, surely that political intervention that you're talking about would raise its head again.
Yes, this is the difficulty. Apparently what happened during the Zuma years was that extra staff was taken on by the state-owned entities in order to help the president at the time's promise of creating extra jobs.
Mm.
He didn't create extra jobs. He simply enforced, he forced these state-owned entities, because he had the power to do so, to employ more people than they needed. Now, what's happened apparently at Eskom is that since in this interim period between then and now, the organization has restructured itself internally so that everybody who's there has a job to do. There's no one sitting there twiddling their thumbs with nothing to do. The difficulty, of course, is that now you've got to restructure, remove a layer of people perhaps, so that you can free that up and get those people out in an environment where these people are probably not going to find other jobs easily. You're going to have a lot of resistance to that. But if he doesn't do that, he's never going to manage the financial challenges that Eskom faces. And so the only way he can do that is if the central government are prepared to stand behind him and allow him to do these things with their blessing.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to work very, very closely with the Minister of Public Enterprises. They're going to have to come to agreement, which is probably then going to have to be taken back to cabinet for ratification, so that everybody is saying the same thing in the same direction, so that Eskom can indeed be recovered. Because if we just allow things to go as they are, business as usual, Eskom is already in the utility death spiral, as it's known, and this spiral is going to simply continue. And then what's going to happen is, when it goes down, it's going to take with it the entire economy of South Africa, because we are 100% reliant on Eskom for electricity. It supplies 90% of the power that is used in this country.
Yes.
So Eskom, as you said in your introduction, on the one hand, is too large to fail. On the other hand, it's too large in its current form to succeed. So the CEO and the board and the chairman and the minister are going to have to work in cooperation with each other, moving in a unified direction, with unified messages to the public, with unified messages to the employees. A clear, open strategy is going to have to be shown and followed, and that's going to be the only way that Eskom can survive in the future.
Yeah, I've come to learn that a CEO is somebody who gets things done, who executes strategy, and doesn't necessarily have to have the core skill of the operation that he's running. Of course, there are lots of debates running about that. But with Mr. De Ruyter's lack in engineering skills, presumably it would make sense for the Department of Public Enterprises to ensure that any future board appointments have more of an engineering leaning, and ultimately, you know, getting Eskom fixed. Because obviously this is not a one-man job, just as Nissan just said before you.
That is true. Nissan's 100% right, and so are you in this case. But an engineer is not necessarily better qualified than a businessman, a shrewd businessman, at the level of CEO, where he's not dealing with the volts and the watts and the amps. He's dealing with rands and cents, and he's dealing with strategy, and he's dealing with market forces. Those are the things that he needs to understand. He needs to draw around him, perhaps, those with engineering skills who can advise him in areas where he needs to understand certain levels of technology. But he doesn't need to have it all in his own head.
Yeah.
I don't think that's necessary. It's not a one-man show. He needs to work with a team and be advised and act accordingly.
Okay, well, let's watch the space and see how he gets along, and whether he's able to deal with the political factors that he's going to have to contend with. Thanks very much, Roger, for your time, as always.
Thank you so much.
That was Roger Lilly. He's an independent energy analyst.